Welcome back to Issues Etc. Here in the second hour, we continue some audio open lines. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, the 26th of June. We're going to be hearing a PBS Religion and Ethics news story on advertising ethics. Think about advertising for a moment. How it is everywhere. There is hardly, I think it's fair to say, there is hardly a moment of our everyday life for the average person. There is hardly a moment that isn't in some way impacted by advertising. I've told my daughter many times, if you want to go, she's very creative, she's artistic, and she's very smart. And I've said, you need to go into advertising. I don't think I have her convinced. But he said there will always be someone who's willing to pay you to advertise. It's always been this way, but especially so nowadays. You'll always have a job. It may not be a great job, but you'll always have a job if you're in advertising. It's everywhere and all the time. Don't just think radio and television and the internet where we meet it so often. It's also in print everywhere. The whole flap that we're having nowadays about political ads as we go into a presidential campaign. What is it about? What can they say in the ads? What can't they say? Is it truthful? Can they advocate for this or not advocate for that? There are rules, by the way, that govern advertising. We actually have a federal bureau, the Federal Trade Commission, that oversees advertising. But it's a pretty loose grip that it holds, obviously. Why do people tune into the Super Bowl? Probably a quarter of them who watch the game are watching for the commercials. I've been to a couple movies lately, and I've noticed, do you remember when they first put commercials before the movies? It's not long before they put commercials. Well, they do already put commercials in the movies. Watched a movie, and there was product placement, is what they call it. And it was, went to see that movie, 1408. By the way, pretty scary movie. And even in a horror movie, there was product placement. I don't know how much Yahoo paid to have its image appear in this movie, but it did. And you hardly even noticed it, unless you were watching for it. It's a stupid thing I do when I watch movies is watch for the product placement. Sometimes it's very obvious and sometimes it's very subtle. But a lot of money changes hands because it's good advertising. Then you've got the commercials before the movies, and as you walk around, even leaving the theater, there it is all around you again. If we have a federal department that oversees advertising, then ethics in advertising is obviously a big, if it's such a big part of our lives, we really should be sort of be concerned about the ethics of advertising, whether or not we're being told the truth. And I think it impacts us as Christians in an additional way. And this is what I want you to think about as we listen to this PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story. It impacts us because the church has taken up the task of advertising and marketing, not always to the best effect. Well, think about it. Most churches advertise with a little blurb in the Saturday paper, or if they have some kind of a special event, they'll buy a little tiny box to advertise. Has the church done a good enough job advertising? Here's the story from PBS's Religion and Ethics News Weekly.
And the gold for non-broadcast single is presented to Coca-Cola for video.
This is the annual One Show Festival in New York, sponsored by the One Club, a nonprofit organization founded to uphold and raise creative standards in advertising. One commercial receiving top honors was an ad for Dove soap, an unusual attempt to broaden the concept of beauty. Mary Warlick is CEO of the One Club.
what Dove is doing. It's showing that there are real people out there. Everybody's not a size two. You can be beautiful in your own skin. And that's a very, very important breakthrough.
Does this mean the advertising industry has turned a new leaf against creating unrealistic images of beauty? Does it mean less sex and violence in media and advertising? Keith Reinhardt is chairman emeritus of the giant ad agency DDB Worldwide, and he has a dim view of the trend of many of today's spots.
We have elected to become a very crass and coarse society. So advertising is reflective of that. And it also influences and helps shape who we are. I think it works both ways. If advertising content and where it's placed and how it's placed is not in concert with where people are and how they think, it's not going to work. To all the patty, special sauce, lettuce,
cheese, pickles, onions, on a sesame seed bun. Reinhardt is considered one of the giants in the business, the creator of some of the more memorable ads of our times.
Yo.
What's that?
What's that?
The What's Up Budweiser commercials ran for 5 years.
In advertising beer, we're very careful not to target people who are below the legal age of drinking. We take the position that that beer is not a bad thing when it's used correctly, properly. We have another point of view on tobacco, which we won't work for.
Most Americans will remember that You Deserve a Break Today McDonald's campaign. That was also Reinhardt.
If you're not ethical in business, you will not survive, at least for long. There have been some commercials that later when I became head of the company, when I saw it, I said, I hope we didn't do that. And in one or two cases, it turned out we did.
Okay, so Madison Avenue meets... Madison Avenue's bread and butter is trying to keep your attention, get your attention, and sell you something. There are people who've made careers off of it. And now Madison Avenue has moved into the church. Most churches have a very small advertising budget. Is that right? In an age of advertising, in an age where everyone has to get their message out, and it's a marketplace of ideas out there, has the church done a good job of advertising? Or of availing itself of the opportunities to advertise? Or look at it this way. If you were sitting... At your church's voters assembly or however you make your decisions, and someone suggested that the advertising budget for the church needs to be bigger. It needs to be significant as it would be if we were running any other kind of retail enterprise. Would you vote for or against? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's Audio Open Lines. I'm Todd Wilkin. Tuesday, the 26th of June, and we're hearing a story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly on advertising ethics.
You know, Todd, they were talking about beer commercials.
Yeah.
We've talked about this. We need to find a beer or a wine underwriter for issues, etc. I think we could make the secular news media with that. No Christian radio station in the country would accept funds from an alcohol...
Well, it would if I had anything to say about it, it would be Sam Adams' Boston Lager, which is, having recently fallen in love with it, the greatest beer ever brewed. It is. I'm sorry. And this is a guy who gave up on beer a long time ago. See if you can work that out, Jeff. If you can get that Sam Adams guy, he seems like he's a friendly character. Maybe he'll underwrite. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. But I only want to advertise the Boston Lager, really. I'm not interested in the other little boutique things they've got going on there. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. A little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking with Scott Klusendorf. He'll respond to two things in the Sunday edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. One, the editorial on the president's veto of federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, and the other, a story on statewide battles over embryonic stem cell research. And after Scott's time with us, we'll review a sermon by Pastor Charles Lehman on the Nativity of John the Baptist. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues etc. at kfuo.org. Should the church do more in advertising, spend more for advertising? Has the church done a good job availing itself of the opportunity to advertise? Or is Madison Avenue something that the church doesn't want to tamper with? Well, whether you're trying to sell hamburgers or beer or whatever you're trying to sell, a big issue in advertising is truth. Here's more from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly.
Advertisers can get in trouble with the Federal Trade Commission if their ads are untruthful or misleading. But the lines are fuzzy, and commercial speech, even in bad taste, is protected by the First Amendment. Of course, just because something is legal doesn't mean it's ethical. Advertising professor Mimi Drumright is with the University of Texas at Austin. She conducted a survey.
Oftentimes, advertising practitioners don't see the ethical issues. They have what we call moral myopia, where the ethical issues just don't come clearly into focus. And oftentimes also we find moral muteness, that people just don't talk about ethical issues.
Professor Drumright says somewhere along the line, many ad executives subordinate their ethics to the wishes of their clients.
You can rationalize, well, the client should make those decisions. My job is to please the client. There is a tendency to compartmentalize. And again, we see this in many businesses where you have one set of values for your home and your friends and your family and another set at work.
It's difficult to exaggerate the impact of the multi-billion dollar advertising industry on our culture and the economy. But it's the moral aspects, both bad and good, of advertising that concern Archbishop John Foley. He heads the Vatican's Office of Social Communications, which has put out a document on ethics in advertising.
You know, the church has been involved in advertising for 2,000 years. We call it evangelization. We really believe our message, and we offer much more than a lifetime guarantee.
That's an interesting take on evangelization. I disagree with Father Foley or Archbishop Foley. Evangelizing is not advertising. When you advertise, you tell people or show people something about what you want to sell them, your product. That's what you're doing when you're advertising. You're saying something about your product. Evangelization isn't saying something about the product. And I hesitate to use the word product, but let's just use this marketing term. Evangelization isn't advertising. It's giving the stuff away free. If you want a very rough analogy, evangelization is giving out free samples of your product, not talking to people about your product. So I disagree with his analogy there. But nonetheless, when it comes to advertising, if you served on your church's outreach board, what would you say about your church in a newspaper ad or a radio or a television commercial or a billboard? What would you want to say about your church? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us issues etc. at kfuo.org. Steve is calling from his car. Hi, Steve.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
Good. You know, what I find interesting is you were doing a sermon review a couple of months ago about a pastor down in Dallas referring to Christianity as a product.
Yeah.
When you have a mindset where you're getting people in to make them a decision, then advertising is a logical extension of that because you have a consumer mindset. And so a lot of churches say, yeah, we're going to advertise because we got to get people in the doors. Okay, great. When you get in the doors, what are you going to give them? Well, if you give them the cross, you're not going to keep their interest too long because they're expecting something, the Christian life or, you know, things like that. And so Christianity is a terrible product if you really look at what Christianity is. It'd be a marketer's nightmare to try to market, because how do you market a bloody person on the cross?
That's a great point, Steve. Thank you so much. I agree. And up until this point, here's my big caveat. It's huge, and if you listen to the show, you know what's coming. Up until this point, almost every attempt for the church to go Madison Avenue has been to the detriment of, quote-unquote, the product. Because the product is unsellable. You can be the best salesperson in the world. And you can sell anything to anyone. But the gospel just doesn't sell. St. Paul says, it is foolishness to Greeks and it is a stumbling block to Jews. And that pretty much covers your whole demographic right there. You can preach it, but you can't sell it. And people are just not interested in buying. That's just the way it is. If you treat the gospel as a product, there are two problems with that. One, you didn't produce it. You didn't manufacture it. So why are you calling it your product? Two, there's nobody out there who wants to buy it. Nobody who wants to buy it. There's no market for it. That's why the church proclaims the gospel and gives it away free rather than sells the gospel. (505) 780-5150, 1-800-730-2727. Every time Madison Avenue has had its way with the church, the product suffers. The gospel suffers. I've watched it happen. I've watched it happen where the sensibilities of marketing in Madison Avenue have slowly but surely turned Jesus Christ crucified for sinners, as Steve said, the bloody Christ dying on the cross for sinners, into something like Christ is great. Jesus loves you. Jesus wants you to have a great day. Or it was really popular. Our church body produced one. There's plenty of hope to go around. That's the gospel became there's plenty of hope to go around when Madison Avenue got a hold of it. Now, let's just say for the sake of argument that someone somewhere can find a way of, quote unquote, marketing the gospel without destroying the gospel. That might be possible. I haven't seen it happen yet. But what if your church wants to advertise? Again, if you're on your church's outreach board and it has been decided that you guys are going to buy ads on radio or television or a billboard or a newspaper ad, what would you want to say about your church? Let's see what the listeners have to say. We'll start with Nick, who calls from his car. Hi, Nick.
Yeah, hi, Todd. Just a thought here. You know, we're almost facing kind of, you know, walking on a tightrope here, because on the one hand, there's the obvious concerns that, you know, you're expressing about, you know, syncretism and kind of morphing the gospel if we go Madison Avenue. On the other hand, I think there's an element of, you know, practical wisdom here. So I think there's a sense in which we might be able to thoughtfully use advertising, not primarily to, you know, preach the gospel or get the gospel out there, but to kind of get our little hook in the minds of people. So, oh, yeah, you know, St. John's Lutheran Church, I was considering going to church. It's in mine, here it is, and I got this information from an advertisement. So maybe it's the kind of thing where God in his providence could certainly use that process of advertising to you know, bring someone to himself. So it's, you know, again, it's a messy thing, but I'm worried about just chucking it out totally.
Right. As long as we don't confuse, and you're absolutely right, Nick, we shouldn't confuse. What Nick is saying is, let's not confuse evangelism with advertising. If your church has an advertising budget, it doesn't go under the evangelism board. Evangelism is the proclamation of the gospel. It isn't advertising your church. And let me say, I think you're right, Nick. Let's use advertising for what it's good for. It's not good for preaching the gospel because the gospel doesn't sell. And the gospel isn't our product. Let's do evangelism. Let evangelism do what it's good for, which is the free, giving people the gospel free, not selling them on the idea of the gospel or selling them the gospel. And let's keep evangelism and advertising separate. So, if your church is going to advertise, what would you want to say about your church? DB's next, calling from his car. Hi, DB.
Hi, Todd. I have a small business I've just started, and my whole goal over the last few weeks is to constantly be retooling my product so that I'll have a consumer that wants to buy that. And I can do that ethically. I can produce a good product that my consumer wants to purchase so that I get something from the consumer, namely, in this case, money. But when it comes to the gospel, I cannot ethically, morally, honestly, righteously make it into a product, because the whole concept of a product is to create something that the consumer wants. And as you've already mentioned, the gospel is not something the consumer wants. I can't retool the gospel in order to make it attractive, because then it's no longer the gospel. So this whole business model that they apply to the church just is incompatible with the church, even when they think that they're approaching it honestly and ethically, because we aren't making something the consumer wants. We are proclaiming something that simply is true, and asking the unbeliever and the believer to respond to the truth of that message of Jesus Christ and Him crucified.
DB, thank you very much. Good thinking. You know what really sold like hotcakes? That Galatian small g gospel. Because the Galatians were great marketers. They were Madison Avenue meets the church way before any of the bright-eyed pinheads of the 21st century decided that the church needed to market its product. The Galatians were. They were geniuses. You know, want to know why? They retooled the gospel. And it sold like hotcakes. And they could sell it to anybody. And it was very popular. In fact, we're given to believe that the best marketeers of this Galatian gospel were a group called the Judaizers, who followed Paul around. And when Paul was giving away the true gospel free, they came in later with a sales pitch for the Galatian gospel. And it was even more popular than the gospel that Paul had preached. Even more popular. Sold. The only problem was, it wasn't the gospel. And it didn't save anybody. People bought it. They enjoyed it. They bonded to it. But it didn't save anybody. In fact, Paul says it actually damned. And so Paul says, don't buy it. And anyone who's selling it, let him be eternally accursed. And anyone who believes it and buys it has fallen from grace and abandoned Christ. But it sold. Gotta say that. When we come back, we've got more audio open lines for your questions and your comments. We'll take your phone calls. We're hearing a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly report on advertising ethics. The question, if your church is going to advertise, and don't confuse advertising with evangelism, if your church is going to advertise, what would you want to say about your church? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, June the 26th. We got a lot more from this advertising ethics story to play for you, and I want to hear from you on this subject. What would you want to say about your church if you could advertise on radio, television, newspapers, print, internet for that matter, a billboard? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back with more audio open lines.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc. Larry Rast, Arthur Just, Carl Fakencher, Kurt Marquardt, Peter Scare, Cameron McKenzie.
You probably recognize these names as regular guests on Issues, Etc. But what else do they have in common? Well, they're all members of the Christ-centered, cross-focused faculty of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Dean Wenthe, Walter A. Meyer II, David Scare, Dan Gard, Charles Geeshan, Bill Weinrich.
Have you ever considered the pastoral ministry? Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call them 1-800-481-2155. Preparing Christ-centered, cross-focused pastors for the 21st century. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
John Pless, Hal Senkbeil, Richard Muller, Roland Ziegler.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. In a legal victory for faith-based initiatives, the Supreme Court ruled yesterday that taxpayers cannot challenge how President Bush uses discretionary funds to advertise them. The lawsuit brought on by the Wisconsin atheist group, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, alleged that the White House violated the Establishment Clause by spending money on seminars that teach organizations how to apply for faith-based funding. Here's Kim Troby.
In the case, the Freedom From Religion Foundation unsuccessfully tried to prove that the executive branch broke the law when it funded advertising for its faith-based initiatives. Legal experts say the ruling gives faith-based groups a seat at the table along with other organizations looking to help out in their communities. Freedom From Religion co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor thinks there's more at play.
Five members of the court are Roman Catholic, and they are voting as a bloc when it comes to religious issues. The four non-Catholics on the Supreme Court voted with us. The five Catholics voted against us.
Not everyone agrees with her analysis.
This is a hugely significant win that I think once and for all is going to put an end to these taxpayer-based lawsuits, which is a lot of what the Establishment Clause cases are.
That's Jay Sekulow with the American Center for Law and Justice. He views the court's majority ruling as a strong rebuff.
If they were to take the Freedom From Religion Foundation's view, it would basically require the federal courts to monitor the proclamations and speeches of the President of the United States and other congressional officials regarding religion, and they're just not going to be in the business of doing that.
The ruling did not address whether the faith-based initiative itself violates the Constitution. For Family News in Focus, I'm Kim Troby.
The Constitution does not allow every disgruntled taxpayer to sue the government. Most cases that make it to the high court involve the Establishment Clause. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Marriage without commitment will not succeed.
Kids, we feel, are different at birth.
The best way to improve your sex life might be to go help your wife with the dishes.
You can build a stable relationship.
I believe the wisdom comes from the scriptures, and it's been
solid words of guidance and encouragement from Dr. James Dobson on Focus on the Family. Heard weekdays right here.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Where do we find Jesus in the Psalms? Reading the Psalms with Luther is our Issues Etc. book of the month for June. For more information, look for the cover of Reading the Psalms with Luther on our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Did you know that the Psalms portray Jesus as our mighty fortress, our shepherd, and our light? Reading the Psalms with Luther, our Issues Etc. book of the month for June.
Coming up later on the program, Scott Klusendorf joins us to respond to St. Louis Post-Dispatch's editorial on the president's veto of federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, and another story about embryonic stem cell research in the Sunday's edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We're talking about ethics in advertising, especially as it bears upon the church. The church has taken up the task of advertising. As long as you distinguish advertising from evangelism, I don't think there's anything really fundamentally problematic about that. So what would you want to say about your church if your church was going to advertise? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's Andy calling from Kirkwood. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Todd. I'm reminded of the beginning of the E.E. Cummings poem, A Salesman is an It That Stinks. And I hesitate to say that because obviously without salesmen, capitalism collapses. But the church doesn't have a capitalist product. And the point of Cummings' poem there, I believe, is that advertising is associated with incomplete information or with disinformation. And you have to be wary. If somebody's promising something for nothing, well, you're going to check it out before you buy, maybe. So what approach does the church take? And the only approach that we have that's been given to us is the law-gospel approach. Those who don't feel the burden of their imperfection don't need or want the gospel. Those who do feel the burden of their imperfection are going to resist the gospel because it's too simple. It doesn't require any effort on their part. But to those who feel the burden of their imperfection and who receive the gospel And this, I guess, in the parable, the sower would be the good soil, rejoice, and it fills their lives.
Thank you very much, Andy. While he was talking there, he was sparking a thought in my mind, and I think he's quite right. Again, it's a distinction between advertising and evangelism. They're not the same thing, regardless of what the Archbishop in the story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly said. The thought is, part of what advertising is trying to do is not just sell you something. It's trying to build a relationship with you. I mean, it really is. There are certain products that you bond to, because once you've bought them and used them and you stick with them. Are you that kind of person? I am. I am the kind of person that once I find something I like and that works, I just keep buying it and I just ignore all other brands. As far as I'm concerned, they might as well not even exist. You will not be able to sell me on them because I found it and it works and it's good and I have no use for anything else. It's a way of simplifying my life.
Give me an example, a couple examples.
I'll give you a couple examples. 409. This is not a paid advertisement. 409.
You actually clean?
Of course I do. Yes. You may not know this by looking at my office, but I am a neat freak. Ask my wife and children.
Pastor Kaseman at Christ our Savior Freiburg actually mentioned that to me once.
What did he say?
That you're very cleanly. You're in your house. You're very.
Ooh, yeah.
You clean up right away. He was.
Oh yeah.
He was hurry up to finish his meal because he was afraid you're going to pull it off the table.
I'll pull the plate out from under you if you take a pause. Yes. My kitchen. And I do say my kitchen. I don't want to sound too effeminate here. Men can cook too. The kitchen must be clean. Now, I must say right now it isn't, because we all hurried out of the house this morning. And it's kind of bugging me, to tell you the truth. Kind of getting under my skin, the fact that there's some dishes sitting on the counter at home. But it's not so bad because I forgot to feed the dog. And if she's smart enough, she'll get up there and lick out what's left of the dishes. And I won't have to feed her when I get home. So I don't have to feel guilty about missing feeding the dog because I left the kitchen dirty. That's the way I think. Okay, I'll give you another example. Let's see. Of something that once I found it, I'm never going back.
Food. Think food.
Oh, of food. Let's see. That's a good question. Little Smokies. Little Smokies. You can't sell me anything. Not the, but it's got to be the Lil apostrophe Smokies. It has to be. And I have no need of any other type of Smokies at all, whatsoever. Don't tell me about them. I'm not interested.
What about the Sonic drinks you bring in every day?
There you
I told
go.
Your daughter Emma when she went with us to Chicago that you could pay for her entire college education if your dad just wouldn't stop at Sonic every day.
Absolutely. Sonic Route 44 iced tea. Don't show me anything else. I am not interested. I have found my true love, and it will be mine forever. I'll tell you another one. You want to know another one? I mean, just while I'm rolling them off the top of my head. They don't have them around here anymore. Schlotzky's. It's a sandwich place. After you've eaten Schlotzky's, you don't want anything else. You have no need of any other food, really. If I could live on them, I would. I wouldn't live long, but they had one up in Fairview Heights, and it lasted about 5 minutes, and then it was gone. So,
how come when we go on road trips, you never said, hey, pull over, let's eat at Schlotzky's?
Because we never pass any.
Oh.
Yeah. There's one about 100 miles north of my parents' house that I'm always driving past when we go on vacation, and I pass it, and I realize I missed the exit, and it just ruins the rest of the trip for me because it's the place I want to go. And, okay, there's just a few examples. But they're trying to build a relationship with you, and that's what they want. They want a guy like me. They want a consumer like me that bonds to their product and then really just dismisses all other products as irrelevant. But in order to do that, that sell has to take place over time. They have to woo you and massage you and convince you. Very, very seldom are we going to be wooed away from one thing, one brand to another brand. It's not going to happen instantly. And here's part of the problem. They know they have to do that. They know you already bonded to something. You're using something to wipe your counter. You're eating some kind of sandwich. And they need to woo you away. And they're willing to be patient to do it, too. This is the one aspect of advertising, for some reason, that the church has really latched onto. And I don't know why. The church has really latched onto this idea in advertising that you need to woo people away from what they're buying now into buying your product. So that, and since the church generally does not distinguish, although it should, doesn't distinguish between advertising and evangelism, the new model of evangelism is all woo and no sell. It's all woo. I heard Bill Hybels interviewed on a Chicago radio station or a Detroit radio station recently. And he's got a new book out. I don't know the name of it. I don't want to sell it for him. And it's all about the woo. The lure. And the one example he gives in the book of how this is supposed to work in real time that he did himself is an example of him meeting two people who were unbelievers, spending about an hour talking with them face to face and never presenting the gospel of Jesus Christ to them. And he cites that as an example of how evangelism ought to happen. And he was called on that by the guy who was interviewing him. And his answer was, well, the Holy Spirit didn't lead me to present the gospel. He said, I planted a seed. What seed did you plant? Oh, we met a nice Christian man today. He wasn't as evil as all those other Christian people. Some seed, Bill. Really. Most people could die happy that way. Because his new method of evangelism, this new insight that he's had into how evangelism is supposed to take place in the 21st century is you don't have to share the gospel anymore. You don't have to proclaim the gospel anymore. It's all woo and no sell. There's no product. There's just a salesman. So these people walked away from him convinced that Bill is a nice guy. But they were never introduced to Jesus. And he said that the Holy Spirit led him to do that. That the Holy Spirit wasn't leading him to proclaim the gospel. Which is very strange because Jesus says that's what the Holy Spirit's all about. Is about testifying to Jesus. So I have some serious doubts as to whether it was the Holy Spirit that was leading Bill to not speak the gospel. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio this Tuesday, the 26th of June, issues ETC at KFUO.org.
Guarantee. That little commercial aside, Archbishop Foley is quite serious about morality and advertising.
We have three principles. One is truth. Always tell the truth. The second one is the dignity of the person. So don't exploit people. And the third principle is the common good, that advertising should serve the common good. When there is advertising in the developing world where people can't afford these products, they become resentful that they can't afford the products.
Now, I would like 500 more sets.
He sees no problem in using religious imagery in ads, as long, of course, as it's done in good taste, like the old Xerox Monk ad.
Are your sets, Father?
What?
The 500 sets you asked for.
It's a miracle.
I think the Xerox Monk could be classed among the creative because monks historically did copying. The copying of scriptures, the copying of the great books in Western civilization.
But according to the Archbishop, there is simply too much sex in the media.
There's a great permissiveness and a great vulgarization of the media, which I think is very unfortunate. It seems to be taken for granted that individuals will have sexual experiences before marriage, and that troubles me.
If you're selling sports bras, it might be necessary and relevant to show a breast, a female breast. If you're selling motor oil along the road, using a woman's figure is gratuitous and demeaning.
Now, that's the guy from Madison Avenue. And he's picking up on the theme of telling the truth in advertising, or we often just say truth in advertising. You know what he's arguing against? This is a guy who actually developed and produced some of the biggest advertising campaigns and most successful in the world. He should know, right? You know what he's arguing against? Bait and switch. He says, look, if you're selling bras, then you can show a woman's bosom. But to do it to sell motor oil is just gratuitous and demeaning, he says. Why? Well, first of all, you don't need to. And second of all, it has nothing to do with your product. The classic definition of bait and switch. You lure them with one thing, only to switch out and give them something completely different. And this is, for some reason, another aspect of Madison Avenue that the church has just latched onto. The worst practices in marketing have been received by the church as the greatest genius in advancing the gospel since St. Paul himself. When we have secular advertisers like this fellow saying, don't bait and switch. Ultimately, it doesn't work, even if you're trying to sell motor oil. So why has the church decided that bait and switch is the way to go? Lure them in with one thing, and then switch out and give them the thing that you really wanted to sell them. Why? It also explains why the church has more and more decided to just stick with the bait and forget the switch. The church has become about the bait, about the lure, so that people can be drawn in. As one of our callers says, if you're going to draw them in, get people in the seats, what are you going to give them when they get there? And there are churches now that subsist entirely upon drawing people in with one thing and staying with that one thing. Bring them in with something other than the gospel, the word of God. And because it worked to bring them in, it works to keep them in. And the switch never occurs. And the gospel never gets proclaimed, which is odd, an odd thing for the church to do. I wrote an article some time back called The Gospel in the Background. This was years ago. I think you can find it at our website, issuesetc.org. Just type into the search engine there, The Gospel in the Background. Where I marveled in print, I marveled at the seeker-sensitive movement in the church that in the name of preaching the gospel more, it advocates preaching the gospel less. That in the name of taking every opportunity to proclaim the gospel, it actually advocates not availing yourself of those opportunities to preach the gospel, but using those opportunities to preach something else other than Christ and Him crucified for sinners. You know what it is? It's very simple. It's like a guy who started out selling vacuum cleaners and no one wanted to buy his vacuum cleaners, but they were all really interested in the shoes he was wearing, and so he decided to become a shoe salesman. The church, in selling the gospel, realized no one really wants this Jesus stuff. But they really are interested in the things that we use to lure them in. So let's just sell that instead. And at that point, you cease to be the church. It's that simple. Here's the rest of the story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly.
Archbishop Foley is also alarmed at the quantity of violence on TV and in TV ads.
In regard to explicit violence, I think is unfortunate for, especially for young people, who don't have the power to distinguish and often seek to imitate what they see. And that can be very destructive for them.
This well-received Coca-Cola spot likely attracted viewers in part because of its adaptation of a very popular, very violent video game. The Coke's version leaves a positive message.
You're gonna be remembered for the things that you say and do.
It seems that many of the most memorable ads are those that were built around smart humor, like this Berlitz spot.
This is the German Coast Guard.
We're thinking.
What are you thinking about?
The One Club also sponsors a pitch contest where advertising students try their powers of persuasion in front of people in the business. This year, a topic that wouldn't have been considered 10 years ago, how to persuade individuals to fight global warming.
So no one's really talking to me, the average consumer. No one's really saying, you, this is what you can be doing to help.
When we are at our best, we're not only lifting sales for the brands entrusted to us, but we're also, I think, lifting the human spirit. We can use that influence to vulgarize, to brutalize society, or we can use it to lift it to a higher level. It's our choice.
In the future, Reinhardt believes that TV commercials are going to have to be very creative to get people to watch, because with TiVo and other technology, consumers can speed through the boring ones. But he is not optimistic that the current trend in both program content and advertising is likely to be reversed. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in New York.
All right, there's the story. You know, if we could keep that bright line between evangelism and advertising, I think the church really could do a better job of advertising. It might begin with letting people know that you're there. That's kind of a good thing to do. Look at what you see by way of church ads. A lot of them, the ones that have the advertising budgets, what are they advertising? Their pastor. Big picture of their pastor and his wife, usually, on the billboard. Or an image of the Christian life that is, everybody knows it's a lie. It's that, you know, that often cited image of the guy who looks like he just walked off the golf course and his wife who just walked out of the beauty shop and the kids who just walked out of whatever they have for kids by way of a beauty shop. And the dog just came from the groomers and they're standing there in a perfectly green lawn on a sunny day in suburbia. It's false advertising because most Christians don't look like that. And the Christian life isn't about that. So maybe we should begin by just making sure that we make the distinction between what the church has been put on here or put on earth to do, that is, proclaim Christ and Him crucified for sinners every Sunday, every sermon, to every sinner, and advertising. We're going to round off today's audio open lines by way of introduction to our next conversation with Scott Klusendorf with this CBS News story on using cord blood, that is umbilical cord blood, to harvest stem cells and its effect.
James Deegan was 6 weeks old when he was diagnosed with leukemia, given a 50-50 chance of survival.
It's every parent's worst nightmare. We were in such shock.
His best hope? A stem cell transplant. Fortunately, 2 years earlier, on a whim, his parents had saved his sister's cord blood.
Aileen was a perfect match. They said, you hit the lottery.
Parents looking for a medical safety net have turned private cord blood banking into a multi-million dollar industry. There are 26 private banks in the U.S. After an initial fee averaging $1,500, most banks charge $100 a year for storage, adding up to $3,500 by the time a child is 21. A high price tag for something you might not ever need.
Here we have cord blood units frozen.
There's another option that doesn't cost a penny, donating to a public bank. The donated cells are then available to any patient, but there's no guarantee of donors getting their own cells back. Another problem? Fewer than 10% of hospitals offer cord blood collection. Precious stem cells are going to waste.
So if you don't donate those cells, what's going to happen to them?
They will go in the trash.
Right now, cord blood is mostly used to treat blood diseases. But there's hope that one day it may also be used to treat other problems, like diabetes and heart disease. For now, the odds of actually needing cord blood are about 1 in 20,000.
James Deegan's parents are glad they took those odds.
What was the best moment?
Probably when we came home from the hospital, and we were all together again.
Thanks to his sister Aileen, today 4-year-old James Deegan is considered cured. Tic-tac-toe. Dr. John LaPook, CBS News, New York.
Hey, Jeff, you just had the fourth of your four children, right? Little Jack?
Yep, Jack.
When your kids were born, did you donate the cord blood?
Beth, absolutely. Always frustrates Beth when she sees about stem cell research stories. Nobody talks about cord blood.
I remember when my daughter was born, and this is 15 years ago. It was just starting.
this donation of cord blood, and I didn't even know what it was. The nurse just said, do you want to do it because they can get stem cells out of this? And I said, I don't know stem cells from, you know, twisty ties. Okay. And we did it to a public bank. Or people are deciding to go the more expensive route and save their own. It's a good thing. You know what it is? It's a way of serving your neighbor. Your kid may never have need of them, and one would pray that they never do. But someone else might. So if when they say, would you like to donate the cord blood, you don't need to know all the ins and outs of what it means. It doesn't hurt, and if you don't, it just goes to waste. And your neighbor isn't served if it just goes to waste. LCMS War Relief is part of what they do worldwide, as they have the broader goal to serve the neighbor wherever that neighbor is found, especially those in the greatest need, largely due to man-made or natural disasters. Part of what they do is defend life from beginning to end. LCMS Life Ministries is only part of what they do. You can find out about everything they do by going to our website tonight, issuesetc.org. Look for Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief, or you can give them a call and earmark a donation to anything they're doing worldwide, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438, LCMS World Relief. When we come back from this break, we're going to start a sermon review. We're going to be talking with Scott Klusendorf. Sorry. Scott will be joining. He's not going to be doing any preaching. We're going to be talking about stem cells again. Now, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch had an editorial. I knew they would. It took them a couple days, but Sunday they printed an editorial responding to the president's veto of a bill that would have provided federal funding, taxpayer funding, that is, for embryonic stem cell research. They think the president was not being entirely honest. They think the president's policy that he described in an executive order when he gave the veto to pursue research on stem cells that have sources other than human embryos, they think that's a bad idea. They think the president has created a false dichotomy between embryonic stem cells and other stem cells. And they don't seem to think much of the president's moral or ethical objections to embryonic stem cell research. We'll see what Scott Klusendorf has to say about that. Also, there's a story in the same edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch about the statewide battles over stem cell research. We'll be about a half hour with Scott, and then we'll be reviewing a sermon preached by Pastor Charles Lehman on the birth of John the Baptist. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, the 26th of June. Well, I was cheering when the president vetoed federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. He's holding that line very well. But not everybody was cheering. Some people thought it was a really bad idea. Others thought that the president, in refusing to compromise and allow federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, was delaying cures for people who are in desperate need. Well, is that true? The story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the column says that we need federal funding, do we? We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.